Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Chamba is a Malawian DJ, producer, singer-songwriter, and activist. Her tour highlights include Soho Sessions New York City, Soho House Stockholm, Swedish Grammys, Norblin Factory Warsaw, Poland, Cannes, France, Lilongwe and Blantyre, Malawi, Johannesburg, South Africa, Maputo, Mozambique. In 2025, her single releases include Dream and Feel It featuring Tayamika. In the past year, Chamba's international DJ sets included Madonna's Oscars After Party, the Smithsonian Museum's Summer Solstice, Gates Foundation Goalkeepers, Daybreaker, the World Economic Forum, and Future Horizon. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Chamba.
Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I am calling in from Lilongwe, Malawi, and a bit in some dim lighting right now. I have two candles because, you know, the famous load shedding across the continent. Yeah.
I thought that was only a South African thing. I didn't realize it was happening in Africa as well.
Oh, man. It's like a sadly pan-African. I wish it was just you guys so my life would be better, but no. Us too. Oh. Yeah. And I think ours is worse as well. So, yeah.
How often does it happen?
About maybe... It used to be twice a week. Now it's about four times a week. And they love to change the schedule. Half the time I'm like, what is this? What's the surprise? Yeah.
We know all about that in South Africa. For the overseas listener, load shedding is when they say they're saving electricity because of certain reasons that we won't get into. And they just switch off all the electricity and you sit in darkness. How did you choose your stage name?
So Chamba has, well, it has several meanings for me. Firstly, it's a bit of my last name, Chilemba, which means a writing, like an alphabet writing or a letter. And then it also means a music genre. So if you were to say the genre of hip hop in my language, my home language, Chichewa, you'd say Chamba Cha hip hop. So it's like a style of music. Then the other meaning, which, you know, no relations, unless we're outside and you ask me, is that it also means weed.
At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, okay, I want to be in this creative music world? And how did that journey progress?
You know, I started young. My parents had me while they were in university, and my dad had all these cassettes and a boombox. His brother used to breakdance, spin on his head and everything, that whole old school breakdance. And for me, as you know, I was a toddler, at these house parties that they would throw, and my dad would be like, go get that cassette with the lady in the blue dress. And I knew, okay, he means material girl, or go get this cassette, disco one, not two. And I'm like, oh my God, there's like disco up to 10 and 16. And so I just grew up mixing all of these cassettes as a kid. Yeah, I would mess up the tape, I'd get in trouble. And I never really imagined a career in it. Also growing up in Malawi, where, you know, an artist's career, there isn't a lot of promise with our economy. But it was just there as a hobby. I was making mixes for friends. Then eventually friends were like, oh, come DJ my birthday. And then slowly small radios, then bigger radios, and then event spaces. And so it really came from more of like a hobby and just a space where, you know, I could be me and just find joy in a way until, yes, now becoming a career.
You're obviously a DJ and you're a producer. You create your own original music as well.
Yes, I do.
How do you create a song?
That's a beautiful question. It's a varied process where I'm very inspired by sound. And so a lot of the times it's, you know, this afternoon there was this bird that I've never had around my house that was chirping. At first it was annoying. And then I was like, you know what? Okay, tape recorder, let's go. Let's see what we got. So I went outside and just sampled a bit of that. And then I'm going to toy with it later on, slowly maybe play some chords over it and then my percussion. But a lot of my beginning is sampling. So I'm a huge samplist. I love just market chance, being in a noisy space and just hearing all the sounds around me and trying to make something out of that.
For the listener who does not know, what does it mean to be a sampler?
Well, the way I define it, or the way I see it, is that you're on this constant journey of discovery. So you're hearing various sounds. You're taking, you know, sometimes it can also be produced sounds where we've seen popular music sometimes be sampled into another. I think one of the most sampled songs is Good Times by Chic. Yeah, it's like the most sampled song in hip hop. But yeah, you take a famous old song or not famous, and then you reinterpret it. You mess around with the vocal or the chords or a part of it, and you turn it into a new interpretation of music, in a sense. But it also doesn't have to be a processed sound. It can be raw, like the bird that I met today.
Do you write lyrics as well for the songs?
With one of my latest videos, vocals. So it's three different vocalist song, and so I combined some of that to create a sentence. And so there's parts where I discover the lyrics as I sample, where I'm like, I like what this person's saying and what that person's saying. Let's create an answer or call kind of situation. Or sometimes I'll work on a beat and then maybe I'll reach out to a vocalist. Some want to do their own writing, but there's also been times when I've been like, I started writing this, and then they're like, I like that, and go on with it in a way. So yeah, both of everything.
What's coming up for the next period of time?
So the song that I mentioned, Dream, we have a radio edit and a Dolby Atmos edit. More visuals. A lot of people were in love with the visuals if you go to my social media chamber. But so I'm more sure more visuals for that. More music. Have a few songs coming out. And then next year, possibly an album. So yeah, I'm in the studio a lot. And these power cuts, again, do not help my creative process.
Sometimes the universe just gives us these things to say, okay. Like, I remember when the power cuts and load shedding started in South Africa, used to really make me angry. And then I thought to myself, no, it's something that's out of my control. I can't do anything about it. So we got to invert and stuff now. But I took the time when I wasn't busy. I'll take that time and say, you know what? Let me just go read a book. Let's just read a book. There's nothing that can be done. That's the way I changed my perspective around it.
No, I think that's also like, you know, when you're so used to using your brain with one medium of, let's say, for me, it's sound. And so I tend to overuse my ears, or if you're editing visually, your eyes, and to give your brain some kind of way to interact with another form of learning or another form of perception in that way. Yeah, there's studies out there that prove that diversity of input has so much richness to it. So I'll go read a book. I'm taking the advice.
And it'll spark ideas for samples and words and everything else. I love that.
Exactly. Thank you.
Being a DJ and performing, obviously it's very important to understand the energy of the audience, understand the energy of the room. Has that something that's come easy to you, or you've had to develop it over time?
A bit of both. I am a bit of an empath, so I generally, even in friendships, I'm usually observant. And what I love before a set, I just love to get to a venue maybe an hour or two early if there's someone performing before me, just to see how different people are reacting to a different sound. You know, I've played at the World Economic Forum. We're talking about a room full of black suits and everyone's here for business. And I'm playing like, I'm like, you should, you know, at least give me like a tap on the, like a foot or something. This is the most uptight crowd that I've just been zero emotion, where I've been like, oh my God, they hate it. And then after, they're all coming through like, I really like the music. But you know, I was in a conversation, but I was really liking the music. So I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So I didn't do anything wrong. So, you know, it helps to see a bit of that. But also sometimes, I think you, as you practice yourself, don't doubt your own art in that way. You never, you know, not everyone will give you that kind of reception where you're like, whoa, they're all grooving. But when it's good, it's good. They'll still feel it.
I like that, because everyone perceives and interprets and processes information, music, knowledge and stuff differently. And just because our perception is that they should be doing it in this way, doesn't mean that they, because they're not doing it in that way, that they're not responding or feeling or experiencing it. So it's an observational lesson for me as well. So thank you for that. What else do you enjoy about performing live?
Performing live, I think I used to hate the nerves before because I was like, oh my gosh, this anxiety, I need to calm down. And I used to really hate it until I was talking to a friend who also performs, and what he said was, you know, the fact that you have those nerves is that's how much you love it. That's how much you care that you want to give such a good performance. That's why you're nervous. The day you stop having nerves is the day you stop caring. And for me, it's those nerves. I like, wow, I really love doing this thing. I'm so nervous. Even if it's a venue I've played at, even for friends, I'm like, what? This is my homie. This is their birthday. And I'm still like, you know, like I want to give a good set every time. I want to give a good performance. And so I think just challenging myself continuously also to deliver, you know, I'm never satisfied. Every time I'm like, oh, so critical. Like, oh, I really wish this mix went better. But I like that I feel that critique within me, you know, as much as sometimes I might chill out, everyone's saying it was a great set, there's still a part of me that's reflective. I think, you know, we got to find, there's this joy in learning. And once we lose that, I guess that's what aging is. The way I understand it is that you stop being a child, you stop enjoying to learn. So the day we stop learning is when we start aging. And so I love being on live stages, just that excitement that I have within, and the fact that my body is nervous means I'm excited to learn still.
Now, when you're performing, is your set 100% your music, or do you remix other artists or a mixture of both?
When I do a strictly live loop set, usually I'm dealing with just my own music. So I'm looping live and coding live and creating live sometimes as well from my music as bass. But particularly when I DJ, then I'm also mixing in other people's music and trying to loop mine in based on where it fits with the next song or the song before.
You referenced that your friend helped you with those nerves. So since the friend told you about that perspective, do you now embrace those nerves and let it empower your set compared to you maybe feeling frightened and it's hindering your set before?
Yeah. You know, it's more like I embrace them, where I think there was a point where I thought that becoming a good DJ or becoming great at what I do is no longer having nerves. And I was waiting for that day where I was like, oh, I can't believe I'm still this. And that actually, when that would make me overthink things, because I was like, oh, I'm so nervous. Then I start really getting into my brain and having these conversations. Then I'm messing up my live performance. But now when I just say like, yeah, I'm nervous, this is part of the art, then I just flow. I'm like, I'm here because I'm good. They invited me because they like what I do. Then I just deliver in a way.
Now, you referenced earlier that growing up in Malawi, the opportunities in the music space was not really apparent, in the sense that there weren't many successful ones or perceived success in the genre or in the field. How have you allowed that to move away from your space and maybe build a path for others to see you, to say, oh, I can also do that?
This is a bit of a long story, so I'm trying to cut it short. But I have a foundation here in Malawi. We're called Tuwale. And a lot of our work, especially around electronic music, we host DJ and music production workshops. And a lot of that just started. I had one DJ controller. And at first I would share it with friends. You know, people would borrow it for a gig. And then eventually, you know, we'd share that online. We had someone from Pioneer reach out and we're like, hey, we want to send some controllers. And then they send some controllers. Then when we started production, it was the same thing with Focusrite and Novation that sent us some production equipment. People started donating their old computers. They're like, hey, we saw you're doing classes. Do you need a computer? So, you know, it's a space that I never imagined growing big, but we slowly, now we have equipment. We have enough equipment to have a class of like 15 to 20. And we've also had some of our DJ graduates. One of them just did an international DJ set at Nyege Nyege Festival last year. And so starting to see some of that also output that's come out. But a lot of that, creating that space, has just been also how, what my experience with the music industry here has been, is that we don't have these platforms. We don't have, you know, we don't even have like a proper music school where you can say like, okay, I'm graduating with this degree in music. So a lot of it is what we create, and it's exciting. You know, it's unfortunate, but it's exciting where, yes, we have to create that. And so even for me, being in a genre of electronic Afro house music, which isn't as popular, I'm in a way kind of paving that space. And there's people now reaching out like, hey, I really like that sound. I want to work with you. Or I also want to produce this. Can you teach me this? And so we're just, yeah, we're continuously all just innovating, creating, because, I mean, who else is going to build those platforms or create that space?
Now, I'm not sure for what it's like in Malawi. We definitely don't have access in South Africa, but I love me a CD. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the listening to song from one to whatever number. Overseas, Europe, UK, America, massive uptick of physicals. A couple of years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls, the biggest since 1990. Also last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And based on these exchanges, which they need to have a high number every day, they monitor it for some other tax purposes. And because of the upsurge of CDs, CDs are now back in the basket. And the research is showing that it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids diving into this world. And then we also have streaming platforms that people consume music on. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I think I've definitely seen it, especially as I tour Europe, where so many people have asked me, hey, do you have a vinyl or do you have this? And I'm seeing this upsurge in just that question, CDs. It is even cassettes. You know, cassettes are also in. And I love especially the rawness of, you know, the sound of the cassette or vinyl. There's just something, there's this richness to the noise and the clipping and everything, or the art of the sound and how that's done, the recording that is. And so same with our conversation just about this force that can come with, you know, when you're experiencing like a blackout, to move away from your screen and really re-engage with something else or something physical. I like that there's that physicality coming back. I think it's not only good for our brains, but also economic wise, also for artists. A lot of artists used to make much more selling CDs back in the days. You know, when the word platinum, they came from like that era of selling. Hey, look, the lights are back. Yeah. I think they heard our conversation. And so, you know, it's great for artists to, I think, have that physicality again and that possible stream of income, because we've all seen how much also streaming takes away from the artist. I'm still waiting for my first paycheck from streaming, because I think it's just going to cover most of my bills of putting the music up online anyway.
Yeah.
And so, you know, streaming doesn't do a lot for artists, which maybe CDs and cassettes did. So I'm for it. I think it's good to get back to some things that are more tangible, things that are just interactive for our brains in different way, in a world where we're just so online and so in our headphones and everything.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question tomorrow, the next day, or the next day, I know your answer will be different every time. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five other artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you can think of songs of theirs, what songs would you play?
I need to make dinner. So I think I love Nina Simone. That old school, Nina Simone, Etta James kind of vibe. I think I might do that. There's this band from Nigeria. I think they're called Kokoroko Collective. And they've been making this jazzy, sort of like Afrobeats. Like the old school Fela Kuti, Femi Kuti kind of vibe. So, you know, I like a vibe like that in the morning. And then daytime, a lot of house, a lot of three-step. So right now, I'm really enjoying music by Atmos Black and Tandy Dry from South Africa. So them, then, so how many artists is that I've given you? Okay, four, oh, five. Wow, okay, I've reached my five.
So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Well, to everyone around the world, I'd say don't sleep on African music. There's just so much. And I don't mean, I say this with a lot of love and respect also for South African and Nigerian music. But, you know, there's also other countries. Ethiopia has incredible jazz. North Africa has this fusion between jazz, and also now they're exploring with house. And so, like, when you listen to like Arabic house, there's a lot more coming out of the continent. So don't be afraid to explore. It's nice to love someone like Burna Boy, but also who are all of the other smaller artists coming out from across the continent. So I'm just encouraging everyone to explore and keep a mindset of discovering and continuously learning.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.